This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, so Baruch Hashem, we survived another cyber attack. I think they came after us from North Korea, and Baruch Hashem, Torah Anytime sent out its whole crew, and they were able to undo it. It's fascinating. Unbelievable. The only thing they were missing was AA batteries. Otherwise, it would have been a perfect defense strategy. Okay, so the Velt says like this. That somebody once said that the 6 years he was in sixth grade were the best years of his life. You know, a lot of times we have the sense that we'd love to press a pause button on life. But it doesn't happen. Life moves on. Life moves on. There's no pause button. There's no rewind. There's no fast forward. Chayim Yamagul fell asleep for 70 years. Fast forwarded 70 years. Didn't work. He didn't have time to acclimate into a new generation. Some say Shabbos is somewhat of a pause button. So, please forgive this analogy. Okay? In my days, when you went to the mikveh in the morning, there was something, or I shouldn't say something, there was someone who had a job. Okay? The job was called to be the mikveh yid. You know what a mikveh yid did, Moshe?
Clean the place, open the place.
No, he sat there. He sat there in front. It was usually a grumpy guy.
Collect the money.
It was either someone who was very grumpy or someone who was very smiley. I can't explain. It never was like your middle of the... Little people never took the job to be a mikveh yid. And he would sit there in the morning, and basically he took the money for you if you wanted to go into the mikveh. He also had a towel next to him, because you paid him, that's when you got your towel. And your soap. And he would sell shoelaces and AA batteries and all sorts of things that you can possibly think. But it was like an institution on its own, a mikveh yid. So it doesn't make a difference how early you came, there was a live face there.
Not anymore.
You see it. Right. And then sometimes people would vent. You know, they would come out, they were angry at their wives, they wouldn't dare scream at their wives, so they would scream at the mikveh guy in the morning. They would say the water is too cold, the water is too hot, too dirty, too wet, you know, whatever, and just to be, to complain. The other thing is, that even though the job of the mikveh yid was to make sure people should pay coming into the mikveh, he never really held someone back. Okay? I mean, no one really, if there was a mikveh yid, he always said, I knew he would say pay, and you would say, I'll pay tomorrow, I'll pay yesterday, I'll pay, I will, I won't. You know, how does the story go? And the man said, Hashem, your day is 1,000 years. So if we prorate that, you're like $1,000,000 is $1 for you. So if you give me one of your dollars, and a basketball rang out, yeah, tomorrow. So he would say to him, you know, we'll pay tomorrow, and the mikveh yid always let you in most of the time. He let you in. We had this cook in the shiva. He was this Muhammad yid, and he put everything into the freezer, ordered it, just in case there was an attack. We never had, if fresh bread came, he put it in the freezer, and he took out the frozen bread, served. So we never really had fresh bread. And once we sent him, are we ever going to have today's bread? He said, yeah, tomorrow. Okay. That's how it was, he'll pay tomorrow. The mikveh yid, also he yelled at you if you took two towels. He yelled at you if you put your towel on the floor and he stood on it. He also had like a lost and found kind of thing. He had a collection of left cracks, right shoes, pile of socks, dentures, you know, anything he had. All assortment of all different types of clothing. You know, when your kids go to camp, you put the seal. So mother spent hours and hours sewing on the labels because you hope to get your clothes back. Even though in most camps you walk around and the kids leave their Shabbos suits, their everything, you get another one. So you try to label all the clothing, so when it goes into the camp wash, it should come back. So they have these ones that stick on, some work, some don't. So remember, once I had a kid that said, please don't label my underwear, my full name. So what if you lose it? Just like make a little symbol of something, like a G or an X. When they say GX, I'll know it's me. I said, what's the problem? Because it's so embarrassing at the end of the summer when they pick it up and say, you know, Gedalia Moshe Pfeifenfuffer, here's your undershirt. You know, don't put your name on it. I remember once I was next to Israel, I was in the airport, and they asked me, did anyone take your suitcase? Of course, me, the big genius, said, yeah, just leave it a minute alone. Like, that's all I need. They opened it up and they took everything out. Now, here's the problem. See, my wife, she could pack a whole building into a suitcase. Me, you know, but a second pair of pajamas, I have to jump on it to close it. So they got everything out. I couldn't get everything back in. And then I'm running, and then this, like, Israeli customs officer is running after me, and he's holding an undershirt, and he's going, Slicha, Adoni, ze shalach, ze shalachar! And everyone's turning around, and going, bum, bum, bum. So the mikveh, you know, he was like, it was like an institution, I can't explain it. The mikveh yid was also, he was also the deciding vote and settled debates that were going on in the mikveh, when those debates go on. Of course, we all know the story. President Trump wanted to know where the leaks are going from. And that he fired Comey, there were still leaks. Where are they coming from? They told him that there's mikvehs all around Barapak and Flatbush, they know everything before it. So he decided that he's going to have one of his best agents dress up like a, you know, like a Chassidish, he'd walk in and he'll hear where the leaks are coming from. So he walks into one of the big, big mikvahs, I'm not going to say it yet. And everyone's quiet, no one says a word. He says, I thought I'm here to discuss politics. He said, usually we do, but today President Trump sent his spark, so we can't. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that story is true, because we'll have to pull it from the website, but that's what I think. Hello, Dubin, how are you? Okay. Alkapanin, that is a scooter, right? Okay. Baruch Hashem. See, people will do anything to come to the Shia. Anyway, so the story goes that this, okay, we haven't said this in a while. These two Yidden, I remember this as a kid, two Yidden in a mikvah, they're arguing. One of them says that he was in a concentration camp for 5 years, he was a munkatabel for 5 years. The other one said, what, 5 years? Impossible, two old men. Well, the Germans came into Debrecen in 19 this and that, and the most you could have been there is 4 years. They'll tell I was there 5 years, the most you could have been there is 4 years. They're sitting there rubbing their backs, and along comes another third Yid, and he says, against the Shayir Nachayar and the Lag, he says, you can't give a Yid another year in a concentration camp. What do you have to fight? He wants to say he was there 5 years, and he was there 5 years. So you understand that a mikveh Yid was a whole institution. Now, today mikvahs do not have mikveh Yid. Today they have turnstiles. You understand? A turnstile does not greet you in the morning. It has no rachmanis on you. You don't have money, it won't let you out. No chesed. Won't even let in two people at a time. Some of them, if the eye catches two people at a time, it undoes your card. It won't give you change. Just saves it for next month. No grace time. And that's it. Rosh Chodesh, it's over. End of the month. So really, what's better? To have a mikveh yid or to have a turnstile? Well, if you ask the person that has to meet the bills at the end of the month, so he'll say, well, now that we don't have a mikveh yid and we have a turnstile, which means there's no way of getting in without paying, so Baruch Hashem, we have money for the water bill, for the gas bill, for the electric bill, for the insurance bill, for maintenance, for the soap, for the laundry, for the mikveh yid's pension, right? But when the mikveh yid was here, it was all very nice that he had all this rachmanis. But we didn't really have money to cover it. So the chayyur, what's better? What's better? Is it better to have a mikveh yid, or is it better to have a turnstile?
Mikveh, like this, you get money.
Yeah, but then you don't have a way of paying for again, most people went in for free. So I always say to Rebbeim at the beginning of the year, I said, you got to know when to be a mikveh yid, and you got to know when to be a turnstile. You know, kulay ahava doesn't work. You know, kids, I love you. You can do whatever you want. Yeah, they'll do whatever they want. And you want to have a classroom. And only rigidity, and only being firm, and only being tough, you know, is dangerous. So the trick is, and it's a trick in chinuch, it's a trick in shalom bayis, it's a trick in relationships. You have to be both a turnstile and a mikveh. Then you have to know when to do which. And it's not always easy. As the story goes, I've said it many times, of a father that was the Rebbe, he had his own kid in his class, not always a good thing. And the father says, my kid is not going to take advantage of me. The kid gets up and walks to the bathroom without permission and says, sit down! And the father, and the Rebbe's name was Rabbi Schwartz, so let's say, Schwartz, sit down! Huh? His father's talking to him that way. I don't care who you are, you don't go to the bathroom without permission. You sit straight, you have your pen and paper. Poor kid says, it's going to be some year. Imagine I have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and have to ask my father permission before I go to the bathroom. And he comes home and his father's all smiles. Why, Shalom, it's Titzach, how did it go today? Baruch Hashem, yeah, anything you want me to talk to your Rebbe about? He goes, yeah, you please ask him not to be so strict. You say, Avinu Malkeinu, right? Hashem is Avinu and he's Malkeinu. So, life is, part of the trick of life is to know when to be the mikveh yid and when to be the turnstile. How you pass through the door. The Belzer Rav Chaim Livracha had a very interesting minute. Whenever he passed through a door, he stopped at Hidat. Put his hands on the mezuzah, wanted to put his hands on the opposite of the mezuzah, and he davened. Even if it was a doorway with no mezuzah on it, he also stopped and davened. And they say that even on the train, they were running, he was running away from the Nazis. It's an amazing escape story. Maybe we'll do it when we get closer to Tisha B'Av. So on this train, they were looking all over him. He was standing and he was davening. Between one doorway and another doorway, he davened. And the understanding was, I heard this in the Rosh and Shiurim, that a doorway has Kiddusha. A doorway has Kiddusha. Why? Some say because that's where the poor person comes and you give him tzedakah. Some say a doorway has Kiddusha because of Mitzrayim. It was the, you had the two posts and you had the mashkev on top and you had to put the blood on top and it became like a mizbeach. So it's always like a mizbeach. A mashkev means Hashem is looking down at you. There's a lashon that the mashkev is a Kaddish Baruch Hu looking down and the two side doorposts are Moshe and Aaron and so on. But I think that the doorway has Kiddusha for different reasons. The doorway represents an ability to move on. Sometimes things in life don't pan out the way we would like. I guess so we do. We go through the door and we go on. I always think about this. It comes like the last week of school. It's rough. You know, the kids are a little jumpy and everything else, and you're like, can't wait for that last day. It's going to get quiet. I can't wait. That noise. I can't take the noise of the kids screaming and yelling and jumping. Then it comes the last day. Quiet. An hour later, it's like, so one thing, where are the kids? You want them back. Life moves on. It goes from, I always say, you know, you bring your kids to the bus, you send them off to camp. And some mothers are crying. It's like this. You can almost tell who's the first kid and who's the youngest kid. And then, that's what happens. I remember my first son, he went to the Yerushalayim. The whole family, like six coach buses, you know, accompanying him to the airport. And everyone's crying and crying. He's going. And then we're counting down the days that he's going to come back. You know, 10 weeks and 9 weeks and 8 weeks and 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 weeks, he's going to come back. And we hung these big streamers on the street. Poor kid was so embarrassed out of his wits. And the car comes and we all came out. Oh, it's so emotional. Because like, and we walk in and there's balloons all over the house and a cake and everything else. And everyone's crying. And it's like my seventh son coming back from Yerushalayim. And I'm in bed at 6 o'clock in the morning and I hear the bell ring, ding, ding, ding. And it's like, who could that be? I look out the window, a kid is standing there with his suitcases and say, your son is supposed to come home today? Oh, I forgot. Oh, Shrek, you know? But that's what happens, right? Life changes. Send kids off to camp. But I'll tell you the truth. It's like you send your first kid off to camp, that's like, you know, it's hard to swallow. Then the middle kids. And then the kids get older. Then you send your youngest children off to camp and the house is like really empty. And you say, no, each year is a different doorway. You got to go from one doorway to the next. Life moves on. But again, what does it mean to go from one doorway to the next? So I once had a kid, years ago in the 8th grade. I tell you, he took another kid apart, verbally, limb by limb. I mean, mamish embarrassed the kishkes out of this kid. He embarrassed himself. I said, what did you do? Then he goes over to him and he asks him for a bracha. Because he once heard that if somebody gets very embarrassed and he doesn't answer back, he has a karech of bracha. So being that he needed a bracha, and he didn't happen to have conveniently have someone that was embarrassed, so immediately he went and embarrassed the kid until he started to cry, and then he asked him for a bracha. Okay? So the logic is there. I mean, it's like, you know, the Rebbe said, everyone come back, and your homework is to do a chesed. This kid comes back an hour late after recess, he says, where were you? He says, I helped an old yid cross the street. So what took so long? He says, you didn't want to cross. I mean, that wasn't easy. And this guy stops, he gives someone a ride on the Palisades, he stops after the bridge, and a lot of traffic to get to like exit 5, he pulls over to the side, he says, get out. What? Here in the middle of the highway? Yeah, get out. Why? I took upon myself to do an hour of chesed, and the hour is up. I remember, this is serious, the hospitals have this thing that like, when you fall asleep, they wake you up. I would think there's like eyes that watch. As soon as the patient falls asleep, ah, blood pressure. Here, fill out this form. Which library book do you want? Something, someone comes in. So I remember, my mother Lashon, she fell asleep. And right at the nurse comes in with the medicine to wake her up. Why do you have to wake her up? I'll give her the medicine. I will give her the medicine. Really? Like she just fell asleep. You're not supposed to be here. It's after visiting hours. That's what happens when you ask questions. It becomes after visiting hours. If you don't ask any questions, it's fine. So finally I said, what is this pill that's so important that you have to wake her up? And I look at it, it's Ambien. It's the sleeping pill. Understand? The doctor prescribed a sleeping pill. So, Yasulagailam, waking her up to give her a sleeping pill. But we do that sometimes if we're short-sighted and we don't have an ability to look a little bit deeper into ourselves and to say, okay, if I want to go in life from one door to the next, then I have to reevaluate my life and say, what does the Rebbe Hashem want me to do now? The Belzer Rebbe Hashem said he had one real chassid. He got his name, Rimpler of the last name, something like that. And the story goes that there were a bunch of chassidim were on the way to Belz for Yom Kippur, and the roads were really tough, and the roads were washed away. When the wagon mamish came to a grinding halt, and they had no choice, they had to stay in some tavern over Yom Kippur. And one rich chassid passed by, he says he has room for one person, so this like Rimpler was the oldest chassid, come on with me. And he got out to the wagon, everyone else was like, we left our families to be in this tavern. And he turns around and says, the Rebbe doesn't need me. He stayed with the chassid. And he davened for them, and dashed for them, and he blew the shofar, Yom Kippur, whatever it was, he died. And so he said, I decided, I'm going to the Rebbe. Why am I going to the Rebbe? That's the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem is for me to stay with them. So the Belzer Rosh Chan Lebracha said, I had one real chassid, and he was him. The one that was willing to give up coming. In the sudden of life, you have to be willing to give it up. So I remember once, I was one of my many previous Gulgulim, I was a learning Rebbe in camp. And I had OD one night. I was in charge of putting the kids to sleep, which is a lot of fun in the bathroom. Throughout the night, I had to walk around. Baruch Hashem, he only had two nights a summer. But, so here I am, and I see two bachurim, walking. What are you doing here? Camp is always this thing. I remember once, I was coming out of a certain camp, which will go unnamed. This is a sidebar story. And they're hitching. I said, ask me if I'm going to Woodburn. I'm going to Woodburn at night, that doesn't sound good. I said, I don't plan on going to Woodburn, but I am driving through. They got in the car. I said, are you allowed to go to Woodburn? Allowed to leave camp? Yeah, because we're a senior staff, and the senior staff is allowed to leave without permission. I don't know, something made me a little nervous. So we start traveling, and he said to them, are you sure? Yeah, we're senior staff. Senior staff is allowed to leave without permission. And as we get to the bottom of this winding road in front of the camp, so this car turns in, I knew that was the head counselor, and these two guys in back dive under the seats. I said, I thought senior camp can leave without permission. They said, yeah, but the head counselor doesn't know that. I'm not sure that we were there. So here I am, I'm doing this duty at night. At 1 o'clock in the morning, there's this buffer walking around with another buffer. Hey, this doesn't look good. They were just sitting on the porch, losing, and I went over to them. They said, give us a few minutes. Make for you. Right? Sure. And the next day, one of these bachurim anyway, was very makbid on fartog, because he always came early to learn. He was always in the Beis Medrash an hour before davening, hour and a half before davening, after the mikvah. And I was like, you, 1 o'clock at night, roaming around? So he looks at me, he was very uncomfortable, and he tells me a very interesting story. He says this bachur came back late. And there was some issue going on with his family, and he was very embarrassed about something that was, news that was on the street, whether valid, true, not true. Then he came in and he started to cry. They made him come back to camp. And this bachur, let's say that's bachur A. Bachur B always woke up early to learn. This kid comes in late, goes, Sham! He opens the lighter drop to get into his, goes, you snap it out, I go to sleep early, I wake up early. And I know this bachur B was very, he had to have a room where everyone's quiet, he has to wake up early, and he wakes up early every morning. And this other bachur is crying under the blanket. Bachur A. So Bachur B realizes he's crying. So he walks over to him and he says, you okay? He says, I'm really embarrassed. And he says, I'm going out of my mind. I can't even breathe in this room. So he says, come, let's go for a walk. And they go for a walk. And he's talking, they're older, mature, and they're talking to each other out. And he's trying to tell them how they're going to deal with it and how to make sure that he's at least as embarrassed as possible, whatever the situation was. He says, I wound up waking up at 3 in the morning. And I taka missed my, for the first time since my bar mitzvah, I missed my fartug seder. I missed my early morning seder. So I feel bad about it, but I felt that that was the right thing to do. So I said to Bacharvi, I want to tell you something, okay? You wake up early to learn. Smart to make a thing, you wake up early to learn. The mouth machal comes and says, ha, look, he wakes up early to learn! Wakes up early in the morning to learn. It's not easy to wake up in the morning. Separate yourself from the magnetic force to the pillow. Most people turn around and you start series B. You know, you wake up, turn around, you start series B. You throw your alarm clock out the window, you got to remind you. That's all. But the guy said he tried to wake up at 6 o'clock, fought with his Yetzer Hara for 3 hours, and won. And the guy got out of it. Did this. Not easy. So the Sparcha wakes up, and the Yitzchak Moshe says it's the school to get up to Yisrael Mason. The person works very hard to wake up for talks, to wake up. Fine. Well, it's all great. It's all wonderful. But how are you doing L'Shem Shemayim? The Malach HaMakatri comes and says, he's not doing L'Shem Shemayim. He's doing, he wants a good Shidduch. He wants everyone to say, oh, he's the Bacher that wakes up early. Remember one of my sons, somebody called the Dira and asked him information about someone. He said, is that person the first one of the Mismanders in the morning? So my son said to him, how would I know? I would have to be there before him to know, right? Okay. So I said, so Taka, you getting up L'Shem Shemayim? You're not getting up L'Shem Shemayim. But when you give up, you're getting up L'Shem Shemayim. Because you decided tonight, the Rebbe Hashem wants you to go for a walk with this Bacher. Try to calm him down and let him know that he has a friend. That shows that all the other times that you woke up, it was L'Shem Shemayim. So you think you missed this morning? No, no, no. This morning established the real meaning behind all your other mornings that you woke up. You know, it says a story, I've heard it brings a story, Ben Ishchai, someone that came up to Shemayim, he had no schusim whatsoever. They said he ate kosher food. He ate kosher food, that's because in his neighborhood there was no trade food. You know what I mean? He grew up on 13th Avenue, 45th Street. And plus, he said, like, why should he eat tray food? You know, you can have kosher Pesach pizza and milch and hot dogs, whatever you want today with a good hashgachah. He had all the food in the world. Why would he eat tray food? That wasn't a selling for him. So they checked through his whole life. They said one time he was on a plane and they brought him some packaged food and he wasn't happy with the hashgachah. And the taka held out. He didn't eat it. He said, that proves that every single day of his life when he ate the kosher food, it was the shame of the kosher food. Even though it was more convenient. So he said it's a scary thing, the Ben Ishchai says, because you can have one chance in your life to prove whatever you do in your life. You got to be careful for those moments that prove who we are, that prove where we are. Okay? A lot of times, the interesting thing, right? The right thing to do is to hold the door open when someone's behind you. You see, Alter, you come, you hold the door open. So I remember you saying to my kids, I would hold the door open and I would see this yid coming from the corner, older yid, and he starts running with a stick because he's uncomfortable that I'm holding the door open. So I said, I want to hold the door open for my conscience, but I'm giving him more tzaris than brach. I remember once we had a yid in Tardas, he's a very chashuv yid, and I was holding the door open for him and he started running and he finally goes, close it, I want to read the signs when we get there. Don't let close it. Yeah, that's way out. That's where he was. Okay? So think before you do something. Does the Kaddish Baruch Hu want it? Does the Kaddish Baruch Hu not want it? And that's one of the things when you step into the house, you put your hands on the mezuzah, and the Rambam says you should be mispalel. What am I being mispalel? Every doorway reflects that I'm stepping from one point to another point in my life. Reassess your life. I'm holy, I'm a tzaddik, are you? Are you? Is there ever a time you're willing to give it up? Because you figured now the Ratzon Hashem is different, which proves that when you do it, you did it for the Ratzon Hashem. Says the Kedushas Lech. The Neshama craves to do the will of a Kadosh Baruch Hu because the Neshama feels what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. The Guf wants pizza. And even when it comes to Ruchnius, the Guf confuses us. The Guf wants to rob us of a taste and a time and mitzvahs. So, by death, when the Guf separates from the Neshama, how are you retire the Guf? With a mitzvah that has no talent. With a mitzvah that says, I'm going to do it regardless. whether it seems to work out for me or it doesn't seem to work out. Mr. Zalman Nelson used to daven with Sikkin. He decided once he's davening with Sikkin, he said he had a tremendous geshmak, then he went back to not davening with Sikkin. And they asked him why, and he said that he met a person by his 8 o'clock minion that he used to daven by, and he said, oh, where are you? He used to, like, you know, Yidden would come over, they would nudge him, they would ask him questions. Now he's davening with Sikkin, and he avoided all, he avoided them. He says, who says that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants? Who says what Kodesh Baruch Hu? Maybe Kodesh Baruch Hu wants me to daven at 8 o'clock and speak to these people. They live it. You live this way, you live a totally different kind of a life. When you walk through the door, you say, where am I going? So the Gemara says in Maseches Ma'id Katan that Bani Chayim is Zaynei, sons, life, and Parnasa, Lav Neschus Atal Yemilse, it's not dependent upon your schus, rather it's dependent upon your mazel. Mazel? What does the word mazel mean? You want to know what the word mazel means? I'll tell you what the word mazel means. There was a Misnagid once who was very angry. In all storybooks, Misnagdim are angry. And when the Magid moved into his town, he said, no, I'm not going over there. Then at the end, maybe I'll try. He started going over to the Magid. He was very mechabed, and so he started learning Hasidus also, and he was like, but he was still a takif. Strong man, strong-minded person. He was also a very wealthy person. He started going to the Magid. He started losing his money. Came to the Rebbe, he said, Yosha, I come to you, I lose my money. So the Rebbe sent him and says, the writes the Hachkim, somebody wants to become smart, yeah, you should go to the south. And if somebody wants to become rich, he should go to the north. And the simon is, the Shulchan in the Beis Hamikdash was to the north, and the Menorah was to the south. Can't be in both places. If you're coming to me to learn Chassidus, coming to me to learn the whole new Ashkafa, so if you're in the south, you let go of the north. So he said, Rebbe, he's still in the snagit, so he can ask questions. There are plenty of your chassidim that are rich. He says, those chassidim, they're totally mevakel themselves. They don't care where they are. They say, Rebbe, wherever you put me, that's where I'll go. They don't need to have things their way. They make schedules, and the schedules don't work out. They say, okay, Yid walked in, I have to talk to him now. They make up, they're going to finish Shas this week, and all of a sudden there's Nebuch someone struggling in the corner, and you sit down with him and you say, let's learn a block. They have their schedules. They never stick it through. They always say, you want me to turn around? I'll turn around. So they're not Typhus Mokum. They're not in any given place. Their place is where the Rebbe wants them to be. But you insist on doing what you want to do, so you're either north or south, so you can't have both. Some people could have both, right? You ask a kid that's in his mother's arms, famous marshal, where are you? In my mother's arms. What's the difference? My mother's on Flatbush Avenue or Church Avenue or East 25th Street. I'm in my mother's arms. If you're saying, wherever I am, I'm here to fulfill the ruts of the bar, you're not Tevis Makkah. You're not Tevis Makkah, so there's no contradiction between the north and south. The word mazel, says the Radak, is some elution of noizel. What does noizel mean?
Nozel.
Nozel. What's nozel?
Spilling.
Spilling, pouring, okay? You look up and water is cascading down from your roof. Maslow, is that right? The water is cascading down from you. Water is noisy.
You have all in the cup and the water falls down.
Right. Guy calls his landlord. He says, you know, there's water coming in from my roof. He says, what do you want for your $1,500? You want grape juice? I'll be happy. What do you want? Right?
I don't know.
So now, Rabbi said, mazel, everyone has a mazel.
Is mazel better
than corn? Okay, we'll still see. But in the heat of things, your mazel melts, it becomes noisy. Parshas Shlach Korach, Chukas Volok Pinchas, represents the greatest emotional challenges that are possible to human beings. The Meraglim was fear. The Meraglim, for whatever reason, well-intended, not well-intended, were fear-mongers, and they were very successful, and Klal Yisrael was overwhelmed with fear. Parshas Korach is a parsha of frustration and anger. Chukas is a parsha of, they were just sick of life turning around and around. They weren't getting anywhere. Nafshei nikatsa b'lechem akleikel. We're here another 38 years. We can't do this. We can't. We try to get in a little bit earlier to Eretz Yisrael. They don't let us. They're like just a certain lack of simcha with life itself. Certain, it's so boring. It's so boring. I can't go on anymore. Baruch represents the ideas. You're complaining. You're scared, you're angry, you're disgusted, The whole parsha's balak. Someone tried to curse Klal Yisrael. Hashem prevented it from cursing, converted the curses to bracha. You don't know what's going on right now, but I'm protecting. The parsha's Pinchas is where they fall into the clutches of tithing, Zimri v'Sali and the Eitzah of the Nice Man. So each of these things are what shake us from our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, either fear or anger or just a lack of appreciation or simcha for life or tithing. And we go through this after Shavuos, coming into the Churban, because the Churban of our lives is when we lose it. The Yaakov Meir Shechter writes from the Gra, every person goes through Kol HaTorah Kulo in his life. In your life, you go through a Chet HaMerag. What? That's what Eretz Yisrael is? All the things that I was hoping for? Oh no, we're petrified out of our wits. Or frustration, anger. What takes advantage of me? Or you go through a Parshas Chukas, just like, I can't take this money anymore. Ugh, you know? We lose it. And all the while Hashem will be showing us, I'm protecting you from Bila. And of course, there's the realms of time. And the reason Klal Yisrael had to go through all of this and fail, says the Devar Chaim, was like antibiotics. It was like injecting polio vaccine into someone. What are you actually injecting? You're injecting the disease, so the antibodies fight it off. And that's why Klal Yisrael had to go through their shia, their level of fear, their level of anger, their level of disgust, the level of taiva. So therefore, it developed the antibodies so that we, all future generations, until Mashiach comes, we can stand up to it, and for us, there's a shmiru. Hey, take it easy. It's all planned. There's a moment in your life, you're very frightened. Oh no, I'm doomed. Oh no. Relax. Now's your parsha shlach in your life. There's a moment in your life, it's not fear. Why did I get the job? It's not fear. Whoa. Relax. This is the kairach in your life. There's a moment like, I can't take this anymore. Every day, the days just roll by. You never move on. That's your parashas chukas. You're complaining about the month. And the tithes that a person faces, that's his parashas bechas. You go to Kol HaTorah Kulo. It's there. It's in your life. Everyone's all excited about an eclipse that's coming on, yeah?
August 21st.
August 21st. There's going to be an eclipse. So what's going to happen by this eclipse? Is it going to get pitch dark?
What's happening?
They say it comes once every what? 100 and whatever
once
years?
Long time.
Once every 100 and somewhat years. Like the last one I remember people were so excited about. Anyway. So they said that there's one patch of a 70-mile belt, a width of land going from California to from the west coast to the east coast, where there it's going to get mamish dark. Middle of the day, it'll be like the middle of the night, the birds are going to go cuckoo. And right now, all the hotels are being booked like crazy because people want to go there. They're worried about traffic. They want to go there to see this amazing phenomenon, which doesn't make sense, where it becomes dark in the middle of the day. I said, stay here. After Shki, you'll see it. What happens. Why do you have to go there? No, it happens during the day. This is like impossible. This is like a out-of-whack thing. What do you mean? It happens every 100 next years. It's not. And I think that the lesson over here is sometimes our life gets like dark in the middle. It's over. It's over. It's all part of the Ashgach. You never had it in your experience. You think it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. To realize that the Kaddish Baruch is always there in the Sabal, and then we have the Savlanis that we can deal with life. So Rav Dessler writes like this, what's Mazel? He says, Klal HaKelim Vasviva HaMishapoim LaAdam Es Hashem Yisbarach, I'll soon translate, Kadei Sheyamali Ben Mizchelke B'Tachel Sabriyah. Everyone's sitting here. Everyone going through their life and their venue. You have issues going on in your life. And no doubt that those issues include some level of anxiety at some level. Some level is normal. No anxiety at all is not normal. When the anxiety begins to affect our everyday self, that's when it becomes a problem. So in our lives, there's a pashas shlach, there's a pashas kairach, that we have to believe there's a bala going on, there's someone trying to curse us and it's being prevented. There's a pinchas. It's all part of our lives. That may have to do with your Shalom situation, that may have to do with your financial situation, that may have to do with your legal situation, that may have to do with your health situation. There are challenges. Children, chinuch, there's constant challenges. Three old ladies sitting together on the rocking chair on the porch, a nice summer, there's not a word. One of them goes, oh. In the middle of the other one goes, ugh. And then the third one says, if we don't stop talking about the kids, I'm leaving. That's it. You know what I mean? We all have our issues. We're going through another. But those aren't issues. Those are Chelkai, says Rav Dessler. Chelkai HaMiyuchid Begilu Kvayde. In other words, there's a certain inyan in your Bechira, in your free choice. There's a certain Maariv, there's a certain Shachris, there's a certain Mincha, there's a certain Shabbos that Hashem is looking for, and you can come up with the courage to deal with that Shabbos, provided that you are who you are. With your fear, your anger, your frustration, your tithes and so on. And there's no one else that can serve Hashem. That's your Masa. Now what happens is, if you're willing to do an about face, you're so determined, I'm going to even the score, no one's going to do this to me anymore, no, I'm... My life is in your hands. You want to be right, you want to be mad, right? You make, you know, a car turning right has a right of way over a car turning left. You're in a little Nissan, and there's a big tractor trailer turning left, and you're supposed to turn right, a chutzpah. You shoot ahead of him, right? And later on, they say by the Levaya, he was right. He was right, he had the right of way. You want to be right, you want to be alive. You want to be married, you want to have shalom bais. And that's what it means, a doorway. The doorway, you see only yourself. Stop. Where does the Hashem want me to go? In which direction? Where does the Kaddish Baruch Hu want me to go? To come through a doorway and say, Hashem, forget what's going to be. Let me put myself into your life. So somebody told me that he went for a driver's test for the license. So he said he went once, and this inspector came in with two other inspectors that she was giving shemesh to, a smicha to. And this inspector gave this real mean look and said, well, go ahead, put in your seatbelt. Apparently trying to act like a turnstile. So he said, for whatever reason, the seatbelt jammed. Couldn't get the seatbelt. Well, how long do I have to wait? It's like sometimes the seatbelt jams or it doesn't come out, you know what I mean? So even it was a driving school. So the driving school guy came over, it jammed, it never jammed on him. He said, he goes, if you don't know how to use the equipment, then you can't drive! Finally, he got the seatbelt to go, but he knew he failed the test before he went. So he came back the next day. He said, what's the point of trying? You can just fail because someone's trying to show off. He says, we do our best and we let the chips fall. So he practices. 2 weeks later, he comes. It's a real hot day. This inspector gets in and goes, whoa, this air conditioning is good. He goes, pal, do me a favor. Go slowly, okay? Take your time. Whoa, I want to spend as much time in this car as I can. Hey, this is comfortable. And they stop going, and they're schmoozing. He goes, you better stop, there's a school bus there, everything out. Okay, you know. And they're parking. He goes, okay, a little bit more, stop. Oh, now you got it. Then he hits the curb. You know, oh, okay, no, do it again so you don't hit the curb. Okay, got it. Hey, great. Boy, this is a comfortable car. I love the air conditioning. Yeah, you passed. You know? He said, the first time I passed, and I failed. The second time I failed, and I passed. Hi, good morning. Welcome to the world. Okay? So you understand that there's a hashgacha? I can't control. I can do everything right and it doesn't work out. Yeah, that's true! Stop blaming! This is the devotion wants me to be now! And what happens when you do that is, your mazel begins to melt. It becomes noisy. And as a result, once something melts, so what the Rabbanu Shalom can recreate it. The Rabbanu Shalom can build it up afterwards of a completely different level. How does that mushroom go from the Kashrus of Maggot? The guy hires someone to fix the roof. He fixes the roof, then he says, I want you to get rid of this ladder because the kids go up to the roof. So he climbs down, and as he's going up the ladder, he knocks out another rung. He gets to the top of the roof. He says, okay, the ladder's disassembled. Great. Help! How do I get down? You know what I mean? So he says, you chacham from the manishtana. You should have done it the other way as you're coming down. So the next day he hires him to undo a ladder that's in a pit. So, of course, he does it the way he told him to do. As he's going down the pit, he takes off the things. Then he goes, help! How do I get up? He goes, what are you doing? I did what you told me to do! You know, life changes. Life changes. We're used to one and a half of life, and sometimes it switches. And we come to a doorway, and we have no problem. So the Gemara says, the other Mikonis are the Mishnei Psachim, coming through two doors, Yachkach Yispal. What are the two doors? It's the door I envision, and it's the door that life sometimes takes me. I thought the Shidduch was going to work out of it. I thought the job would work out of it. Okay, fine. So the Banshalala, just tell me where you want me to go. That melts your mazel. Oh, you're not insisting on having it your way? Fine, then I don't have to put you where your mazel sends you. So the Yidden are complaining, we can't take the money, we can't take this life, everything is rat, everything is not good. So they create Lashon Hara, they create the Nachash. They Yishalach Behem Nachash in Israel. Whenever a person is over in a veil, the Archaim HaKadosh says, he creates a tangible entity of Hezek. The Talmud Devar says that's the great chesed of the Kaddish Baruch Hu. We're over averus, we create mazikim. Those mazikim will destroy us. Hashem feeds them and gives them life in the hope that in the interim we're going to do tshuva or yisurim, remove our chitam. But sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu releases the mazik. When it comes to Lashon Hara, Chavetz Chaim talks about this a lot, you create such a powerful nachash, it almost gets released instantly. So the Yishalach Behem means, not that Hashem sent it, but the Yerachayim HaKadosh says, it means Hashem released the nachash and Misrafim that were created by their complaining. So it says that we go to the, we ask the nachash, what are you doing, nachash? Why are you killing people? You know, everything tastes like earth. What's the point of sticking your fangs into something and the venom kills them? Why? He says, what's the point of speaking Lashon Hara? What do you get out of it? You want to eat a tray for cookie, you eat a tray for cookie. What do you get out of speaking Lashon Hara? My Yitra Labava Lashon. So this, when a person is just totally dissatisfied because he fails to have an appreciation for what he has, usually because he has too much of it, that creates the Koyach of Nachash. Klal Yisrael were privy to see the Nachash, and the Nachash started to destroy them. And they ran to Moshe Rabbeinu, they said, look, we created this Nachash, it was released. Help! So Moshe is told to make a Nachash of Nachashes. What are you doing? You're making a copper snake, this is what's killing us. So the Ramban says, it's Hepach HaInyan. A person that's bitten by a snake is not even supposed to see a snake, imagine a snake. He said, no. You're reaching certain emotional drops in your life. Whether you're in Parsha Shlach, where you're scared, whether you're in Parsha Koirach, where you're frustrated, you don't understand this frustration is where all eyes are on you. Act now! We want your Maariv now! We want your Shabbos now! In this struggle, it's not your wife that yelled at you, it's not your husband that yelled at you. But the Rebbe wants something from you. Kadosh Baruch Hu, take my broken heart and let me use that Kayach and Tefillah. That Nachash could have melted your mazel. What are you complaining about? But Moshe finds his Chon Levache standing, leaving a love of Malka, and the elevator door is closing, and a kid says, I get to Nacht, and the door closes. The elevator comes down, and Moshe says, we have to go back up. Because I didn't have a chance to nod back to him. He's going to think I'm going to talk to him. We're late, the kid! We're going to find him! We're going back up. The door opens. Shnei Pesach. I'm willing to open the door again. I'm willing to understand whether Rabbi Hashem wants the door, whether Rabbi Hashem doesn't want the door. So Rabbi Moshe was once walking, his little kid davening Shmon Esrei. He said, I'm not going to walk in front of a kid davening Shmon Esrei. Just a kid, we're late. He said, just a kid. Halacha says you can't walk. There's a wall. There's no door. If there's a wall, you can't walk through a wall. That's how Rabbi Moshe would view his assessment. If something is the Ratz in Hashem, or it's not the Ratz in Hashem. So it says, the Oilu Mikonis Adam Shnei Pesachim Ba'ach Kach Yisbal. There's different sheet in the Shulchan Aruch what it means. Some say you're not supposed to daven next to the door because it looks like you're in a rush to leave. Some say you're supposed to, it's a shir in zman. You wait a little bit till you relax. Till you don't jump at the davening right away. In the Chassidus Shesvarim it says, the other Mikonis Adam Shnei Pesachim based on the Zohar. We try to help ourselves in the most impossible situation. Where am I going? How can I help myself? You try. You go through the first door, Hashem carries you through the next door. It says, Pischu Pesach. Open an opening like the opening of a needle, and I will open up an opening like the opening of the great ulam of the Mizbeach, ulam of the Beis HaMikdash, the great hallway of the Beis HaMikdash. You open a little, I'll open a lot. Bilam tried to curse Klal Yisrael, the curse couldn't penetrate. Why? Because he saw she'ain't pischein b'chuvanu zeh k'neged zeh, the openings aren't aligned. It means nobody was looking into someone else's business, right? Nobody was looking into business. Yeah, people actually respected their privacy, right? Story of the cheesecake, right? You know? Oh, come on, I said it like 1,000 times this year. The one lady looks at the other lady and says, you know, yeah, what? She looks through her window. That cheesecake is so good, can I have some? You're looking through my window? You see what I'm baking? No privacy, a chutzpah! And then you can't have any cheesecake. Why? Because you're flesh. Okay? So, no. So the pastor means the other you caught us out of Shnei Pesachim, right? Bilam saw the Pischeim are not mechavanim zeh k'neged zeh, he couldn't curse them. So there's a vart. He said they're pischeim are not mechavanim zeh k'neged zeh, says the Katzke. They open up a little door, Hashem opens up a big door. We're depressed, we're frustrated, we feel like we're taken advantage of, we feel that my life is over, it's too late. And I still try to wake up in the morning. I still try to go through the door. Hashem says, you're trying to go through your little door, I'll open a big door for you. I'll open up, I'll melt your mazel and recreate it. So, this fellow told me he works in a nursing home. And he was a technician. He was called at 4 a.m. in the morning to fix the steam or something. And he walks into a room. And the way the rooms are set up in this nursing home is there are two beds, and there's a little hallway in between. And there's a kid sitting in his wheelchair saying Tillim at 4 a.m. in the morning. He's like, couldn't sleep, Rabbi Yid. He says, no, I do this every morning. So I said, why? So he says that for 40 years, he was the shamus in a certain shul, and he used to open up the doors of the Beis Medrash at 4 a.m., get the shul ready. First person walked in at 5, and for an hour he sat and said till him that all the people that walk into the shul should have a good day, a safe day. That was, he felt like that was his achrayus as the shamus in the shul. Now that he's sick, he was put into a nursing home. He was very depressed. So his Rav came to visit him. He said, you think Hashem only hears your tillim by the door of the shul? Any doorway over here opens up doorways all over. So he gave me my simchas achayim back. He says, every morning I'm doing this 2 years already. I come out, I sit between these two doors, and I say tillim for all the people that are here, they should be okay. That life should go on. The oilam yikonis adam shnei psach. The trick is, find your two doors, wherever they are. You may not be happy with those two doors. But say, this is the door you gave me, this is the door that I am going to go with. And then the very nachash, that represents the greatest threat in your life, becomes the very bracha.
You've just experienced another Torah class, brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.